And now it's time for our main speaker, Jack L.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jack Lukes, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Harvey and Eileen for inviting me to take part in the meeting and then promptly leaving the country. I was in Pasadena one time at a meeting where there were a lot of people in their 70s. I was told it was the oldest meeting in Pasadena, and they didn't blow out their candles there. When they took cakes, they were handed a fan, and they seriously, they waved out their candles. And I remember the secretary explaining to me that the reason for that was because once a man in his mid-70s blew out about 25 candles and his bridge work went into the cake. I don't know if that's true. Not everything that you hear from podiums is true, folks. People have a tendency to gild the lily from time to time, and I really want to do my darndest to say the truth. And you know, it's difficult to remember the truth about when I drank, quite honestly. I mean, I know the truth a lot more about my sobriety because I was here for it. And I know I heard this story of about they took a couple of newcomers. You may have heard of a version of this. They took a couple of newcomers and put one in one room full of video games and toys, and they took the other one and put him in a room that was completely filled with horse shit. And they left him in there for about a half hour, and then they went in to check on them. And the guy in the video room with all the games he could possibly want was groaning and griping and complaining because they didn't have the one game that he wanted. And they went into the other room, and that newcomer was just jumping all over and throwing the horse shit in the air and just having the time of his life. And they said, "What are you so happy about?" And he said, "With all this horse shit, there must be an AA speaker in here someplace." I want to wish everybody who took a cake tonight happy birthday. I want to welcome everybody here who's new tonight. That is a very difficult place to be. It was very difficult for me to be new in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's the only place I know where I could hate my guts out and be loved for it. I didn't take very well to people telling me that they wanted to be my friend when I first got here. You know, and I'll tell you something, this room is filled with people who are my friends today. There are people in this room that I care about very much, people in this room who care about me. There are people in this room who have shown me that they care about me. And if you're like me, newcomers, when I came in here and somebody asked me for my number or wanted to get to know me, boy, you know, the first thing I thought of was, man, I don't want people converging on my apartment. I don't want them coming through the windows and doors and wanting things from me and asking me things and having expectations. And you know, it never turned out that way. The way that it's turned out is that from time to time, I have somebody help me through one night, just one night. You know, they don't invade my life. I have people that I love because of one night that it was very difficult for me to get through. You know, and there are people like that in this room right now that have helped me through one night, and I'm sober today. You know, I didn't have to drink, and man, I thought I was in big trouble. I really thought I was in big trouble and it all is a faint memory now. But at the time, I was so obsessed with what was going on in my life, and I just thought I was going to die. Thought I was going to die when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. The pain that I was in when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was coming out of a divorce. And I just thought I was going to die. And what I have over you, if you're new, is that I have gone through the pain and come out the other side. And I had never done that before. Because what I did for 17 years was make the pain go away with chemicals. I was not on this planet for those 17 years. My feet were not on the ground. All I did was take a drink whenever I had a problem. Whenever I had any kind of conflict in my life, I took a drink. Whenever I had anxiety, I took a drink. And I didn't have to do what other people, non-drinkers and non-chemical type people did. They just met the problem. They had no choice. They had no escape. And they met the problem and they did what they had to do. And they got through the pain because the only way out of pain is through pain. And that's what they did because they had no choice. But I had a choice. I had something that worked for me. And alcohol worked for me right up to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. It still worked for me. I'm not one of those people who's going to tell you that alcohol didn't work for me anymore because it still made me escape. But I had made so much trouble in my life during the periods that I was escaping that I had to do something. You know, I've always tried to control my life, and it's just never worked for me. I talk about my cats sometimes. I got a couple of cats. I only have one now. One of them died. I used to try to control them when I drank. And I remember one day I had a brilliant idea because my life wasn't very exciting when I drank. I did a lot of drinking by myself. Spent a lot of time in apartments by myself. I had these two cats and they would listen and I would want to control them. And one day I got a brilliant idea on how to control them. I went out and I bought a squirt gun. And I brought that squirt gun home. And I knew I was going to be able to discipline those cats because you know how cats are. They will not do what I say. And I took out that squirt gun and I wanted to discipline those cats. I wanted to wait and see when they tried to pull something. And then I could use this squirt gun to get them in line again. And wouldn't you know it, I sat there all night. And absolutely, they did not one thing wrong all night. But because I am the kind of guy that I am, I just drilled them anyway for fun. You know, cats are not supposedly considered to be very smart animals. I mean, human beings are supposed to be the higher species. That is what I have been told. But I watch my cat, and my cat teaches me a lot about me and about my alcoholism. For instance, when I watch my cat, when my cat is sitting on the living room carpet, and you know how cats sit in that sphinx-like position, and I look at my cat, I realize that my cat never ever gets afraid until there is something to be afraid of. If I go up to my cat and I do this, my cat will be startled and afraid. But I guarantee you my cat doesn't sit there and think, I wonder if that guy's going to come over. But I'm the higher species, see? My main problem in my sobriety is that I am a human being, and I have noticed that as a human being, I am small and I am petty, and I have an inclination to take shortcuts. I am not a guy who goes into the apartment house laundry room and cleans the filter on the dryer after I'm done. I leave it for the next guy. Because I am a small and petty person, and by nature, as a human being, I take shortcuts and I take what we talk about around here called the softer, easier way. That is everything as I see that technology is. It's to make things softer and easier, and that is what I want. That is what I want, and so I have to watch it, because around Alcoholics Anonymous, I can't afford to take soft, easy shortcuts. Because I'm the kind of a guy who, if I look at a speaker and say, this is not someone I want to hear, and I leave, then the next time it'll be easier for me to leave again, and again, and again, and pretty soon I won't be there anymore. And I was taught very early when I got here that I stay no matter what after I get to a meeting, unless I planned to leave that meeting before I got to the meeting for some appointment. You know, I'm not here. We talk about God's will. I don't talk about God's will very often, but it just seems to me that if I go to a meeting and a particular speaker gets up, that's got to be God's will. And when I go, no, I don't want to hear him, then I'm doing what I want. And that's what I always do. I always try to control and manipulate and scheme, and when things get better, as they have in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've tried to keep them. I don't want you to take the good stuff that I get in Alcoholics Anonymous away from me. And yet when I first showed up, man, I was willing to do anything. Anything you wanted. I was generous, and I drive, and I do this, and I do that. And people get up and they say, when I came here, I was selfish. Well, I was selfish when I came here, and I'm selfish now, but it's a different kind of selfishness. You know, the kind of selfishness that I had before I got to AA was the kind that always left me with anxiety. I always did for me, and I always felt bad afterward. And today I've noticed that if I help you push your car when it's stalled, or if I talk to a guy that I don't particularly want to hear what he has to say, but he's a newcomer and nobody's listening, that makes me feel better about myself. I do it. I am motivated for me, not him. Because I have found that I got to do things that make me feel good about me. And I notice that when I'm kind to somebody, that makes me feel good about me, and so that's why I do it. I call that selfish. If you want to know my definition of unselfish, you take your paycheck, you cash it, you go to South Central LA, and you slip it under somebody's door, and you don't tell them, and you don't tell your sponsor, and you don't tell your family, and you don't tell anybody. That's unselfish. I'm not that kind of guy. It says in that book that I could not manage my own life. Well, I can't manage my own life in sobriety sometimes, even today. I cannot manage my own life. I have a mind that causes me so much anxiety from time to time that I'm defenseless against it. That's why I have a sponsor and people in AA that I can call who help me to regain my balance, because, man, I can't do it on my own a lot of times. I had a stomach ache about a week ago. I haven't been to the doctor in a long time, and I went to the doctor, happened to be a woman, and she said, you know, she pressed my stomach a couple of times, and I said, that hurt, and I saw this look on her face, and then she said something. And I don't know what she said right then, but I know what I heard. She said, and you're so young. And I have been moving this week. And I'm really mad at the guy who owns this fourplex that I moved into. Because he didn't have a refrigerator in the apartment that I took. And all of my life, when I've moved into an apartment, they have had a refrigerator. Now, I'm the kind of guy who looks at that situation and instead of saying to himself, my God, I've been fortunate. Every apartment I've ever moved into has had a refrigerator. I'm the kind of guy who says, how come he doesn't have a refrigerator in here? And then I had to go out and buy one, okay? Let me tell you about that real quick. I had to go out and buy a refrigerator. I hadn't done that, well, not really ever, for many, many, many years. And I went out, and I started looking at used refrigerators. I couldn't find any that were to my liking. And I finally, just sweating bullets, I thought, okay, I'm going to have to buy a new one. So, of course, I went over to Circuit City, and I went to Adre's, and I went to Sears and priced them, checked them all out. And I just agonized over it. I couldn't, as a grown man, make a decision about what refrigerator I was going to buy. And I went home, and I knew that the day was coming where my food was going to get warm. And I went to a couple of more used places desperately. I remember going in the one used place and looked at all these refrigerators. Some guy came in and was trying to sell this store his old refrigerator. And I said, well, wait a second. Talk to me first. I tried to make a deal with him, and then that didn't work out. And finally, I called my sponsor, and I said, you know, this is the problem I'm having. And he said, Jack, I just want you to make a contract with me that you're going to go out tomorrow and buy that refrigerator you told me about at Circuit City. Just go buy it, okay? You can afford it. Go buy the refrigerator. I said, all right, good. Thank you. That's what I needed. I needed somebody younger than me to help me decide what to do about this refrigerator. So I went out the next day, and I went right over to Circuit City. And I looked at that refrigerator. Then I looked at a couple of more again. Then I thought, well, now, what did they have over at Adre's again? And I went over to Adre's again. Then I went over to Sears again. Then I went to a couple of used places, and I thought, I've got to get this thing. I've got to get this refrigerator. And I started traveling south on Van Nuys Boulevard, headed toward Victory, to make a left to go to Circuit City. And I got into the left-hand turn lane. Now, I happened to have been giving a talk that night. I got into the left-hand turn lane, and as I was sitting there, waiting to make a left behind a couple of other cars, I started thinking again. And I thought, you know, I'm going to probably talk about this tonight when I go to that meeting. And suppose when I talk about it, a number of people are going to come up to me afterward and say, hey, I've got a used refrigerator. You don't have to buy one. Come on. And right away, I started scheming and manipulating, angling my way. And I thought, can I get out of this left-hand turn lane? I don't want to go buy a refrigerator now, because then I'm going to have to go through all that hassle of trying to get my money back. So I pulled out of the lane finally, and I headed home. And finally, when I almost got home, I thought, you know, maybe I'll just go back and buy it, and then if anybody at the meeting says that, I'll just go through the hassle of exchanging it. So I did go and buy the refrigerator. So sometimes I can't manage my own life. And there's a lot of enthusiasm. I agonize over things from time to time, as some of you know. And, you know, there were people up here who took their cakes and they were so full of life. And I envy that. Now, remember, I heard an aerobics instructor make an announcement over the PA where at my gym. And she just sounded so up and bubbly, you know. And I remember lying there doing whatever I was doing, and I thought, God, I've never been that way. You know, here I've been sober all these years, and I don't have that kind of enthusiasm. Let me give you an example. I'm the kind of guy who, like, when I was in an apartment one time, I work at home a lot, and when an apartment is suddenly vacant, remember, I had this place behind another place, and that place was suddenly vacant, and I started to wonder, you know, now who's going to move in there? Why didn't those other people stay here? I mean, I finally got them in line. They're quiet now. And this, suddenly I look out the window one day and they're taking down the sign and there's a guy and a little 5-year-old kid, you know. And this kid is, the next day he's out right under my window and he's playing. I think he was playing with a, you know, a model airplane or a skateboard or something. And I remember thinking, God, you know, there are actually people in this world who would look out at that kid and they'd think, oh. Little 5-year-old just moved in. God, that's great. Maybe we'll come over, we'll get to know each other. It's wonderful. And all I thought was, that little punk is going to torture my cat. I bet there's somebody in here tonight that's suffering from a relationship ending. Well, hey. You know, don't get too down about that. I've done that. There are truths you're going to find out in Alcoholics Anonymous about yourself, especially after you've been here for a while. Things that you don't see when they're happening, you know. Now, let's not pass over the fact that I had a major drinking problem for about 17 years. And when I got here, I was a little resentful that all of the people that were around my age that were out there were doing a lot better professionally and personally than I was. And that made me angry. I didn't understand why. And it took me a while to realize that it was because they, for the 17 years that I'd been drinking, had been setting goals, taking actions, and moving towards their goals little by little. They were going through life little by little and getting their goals met. And all I was doing for 17 years was going around in circles. I remember I kept going under this overpass. My wife and I were together about 12 years, and before we got together, for years I used to go under this overpass from her house. And I remember every time I got near that overpass, and I'd been drinking, and I'd get near that overpass, and I'd just think, I'm going to get my life together tomorrow. I know I'm going to get my life together tomorrow. I'm going to start tomorrow, finally. You know, I can't do this anymore. I cannot do this anymore. I'm eating away my whole life. You know, there's nothing going on in my life. I'm not going to have a second chance. I've got to stop this. I've got to stop this kind of life, this drinking night after night after year after year. And then I would just say, well, I'll start tomorrow. And if it was Friday, I'd say, well, I'll start Monday. And if it was Thanksgiving, I'll start January 2nd. And I ate up 17 years of my life, and I'll never have another chance. If you're new tonight, you are at a fork at the road, whether you want to admit it or not. If you're anything like me, you're at a fork of the road, and There is nothing that I can say to give you the faith to keep coming back here. I might be able to say something that makes you come back tomorrow. That's about it. But other than that, there's nothing I can say. You've got to be here for a while to get it. You got to go through life without chemicals a few times to realize you're not going to die. And the only way to do that is to keep coming back night after night after night after night. You know, and we talk about one day at a time. I mean, I knew about one day at a time before I got here, certainly. Because I rationalized my drinking one day at a time. If I'd have known I was going to drink for 17 years, I wouldn't have done it. But it was okay to drink one day. And that's how I did it. I strung together 17 years. I am so grateful. I forget that. I forget it, and I somehow never have the experience of being grateful when I'm standing behind a podium. I don't know why. It happens to me when I'm in my car or when I'm someplace, and I actually feel it in my whole spirit. I feel how lucky that I am, that I was given a chance, and I don't take credit for my sobriety. I don't know how it happened. I'm not here to tell you how to stay sober other than not take a drink, as the old timers say. I don't know anything about how to stay sober. I do know something about how to stay clean of conscience, because I was taught to promptly admit when I'm wrong as often as I possibly can, what we call the 10th step in Alcoholics Anonymous. I notice that I sleep well at nights. I like that. I like that. I don't want to give that up. See, I'm the kind of a guy that's very self-destructive. If things start to go bad, I have, it seems like a solution for me to screw it all. And I don't want to do that. I was in Texas. You know, I got to tell you, I don't do unemployment well, or I actually do it a lot better now than I used to. I was employed in Texas for about 6 months, came back here, and I've been unemployed for a while, and I noticed that I do unemployment much better than I used to do. Let me tell you how I used to do unemployment. Get up at about 8 o'clock and do, well, I had an agenda. You do about 2 hours of self-pity to begin with. And when that gets tiresome, I used to shift gears and do about 2.5 hours of contempt for others. Now that is something that I can do very easily. By that time, I was pretty exhausted. I'd take my first nap of the day. And feeling guilty when I woke up, I would do my spiritual program, devote a little time to that, 10, maybe 12 seconds to that. How long does it take to say, gimme, 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 gimme? I noticed today that my life has changed a lot. I used to say things from these podiums that I just can't say anymore because they stick in my throat. They're not true anymore. It's not that bad anymore. Life has gotten good in spite of me. Because you see, the most uncomfortable thing in life for me is comfort. The most difficult state of mind for me is happiness. I don't do it well. Now, everybody wants happiness. But man, when I get it, I'm in trouble because I have a hard time with it. I'm so used to the other. I'm so used to choosing the other. And I'm beginning to learn how to let comfort be okay in my life, to let happiness be okay in my life. And I think that's because I've gone to these meetings and talked about it and heard about it over and over and over and over again. And thank God I don't have any trouble going to 4 meetings a week. I never did. It's like insulin to a diabetic, I was told, and I have never experienced. I mean, I've certainly had the feelings. But as someone said during the birthday, feelings aren't facts. You know, man, my feelings are up and down and all over the place, and I want to kill and I want to love and I want to do it all. And I got to remember, anything that I do based on my emotions gets me in trouble. And if I do anything because I feel like it, or I don't do anything because I don't feel like it, if I come to one of these meetings and I don't feel like being here, or I don't feel like going to a meeting, I still go. very rarely do I not go, because I was taught well when I got here, and I'm very, very grateful for that. You know, people taught me what to do when it gets bad, and that's invaluable. When I was, I have a medallion here in my pocket. They gave it to me in Texas. It's for 9 years of sobriety. They don't give cakes in Texas, or at least where I was. It's not a precious metal. When I take this out of my pocket at night and I put it on the dresser along with a wallet or money or change or keys, sometimes I think, you know, if a burglar came in and he looked over all the stuff on my dresser so that he could take what was valuable, he'd probably leave this behind if he knew anything about precious metal. And what he would be leaving behind is the most precious thing. What this represents is the most precious thing in my life. None of the rest of it, nothing in my life would work if it wasn't for what this represents. There's no way you'll know that if you don't stick around here. So I welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous if you're new. I really do hope you stay. Yeah.